tosses up. Van Hulke dope move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No, that's good.
She got it.
Katie Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Just like that, we're back for another edition of the award-winning Red Zone here at WZND. I'm Leo Stoddard, your sports director here at WZND Radio. I'm joined by my regular co-host, Joey Dwyer, production director at WZND, and Joe Kennedy, our producer and just overall director of good vibes and feelings here. And we're coming in with a little bit of some
action going
here
on,
because the Red Zone has been actually recognized by College Broadcasters Incorporated, not just once, but twice, Joe Kennedy, my good friend here, for best sportscast in the nation, nominated for two of our shows from last semester, which was pretty impressive, the Ashley Santos show and the Kaylee Chevelle show. Both of those were nominated, which just speaks a lot to what we were able to accomplish last semester and hopefully what we can continue here, as Joey Dwyer's ego has really just gone through the roof.
It's gone way too high, I think, now. I mean, when we first arrived over last semester, things got off to a good start, and then just Joey Dwyer just started getting cocky out of nowhere with everything.
It was absolutely brutal for us to get those recognitions, because now I'm walking around like I'm God's gift to Earth down here in the station.
And you can't see Joey, but he's wearing an Adidas tracksuit with a gold chain that says number one on it. Is that real gold, or is that a knockoff, Joey?
Some diamonds, too.
I look like Sue Sylvester from Glee.
Oh, God. I don't even know who that is.
all my Glee.
That was a reference.
That was for all my Gleeks out there. I know it's a sports show.
All right, all four.
But it's pretty awesome we got nominated for those things, though. I mean, it's pretty cool to see. And all the work everyone's put in here at WZND, it's not even just us.
Yeah, not even just us. I mean, Maritza Navarro-Lopez was recognized for some outstanding reporting. The Bird's Eye View team, who was really put in some great work last semester, was also recognized. So it was just great to see people that put in those long hours get recognized. And we get to toot our own horn a little bit, so that's what's fun, too. Mm-hmm. But moving into sports, it was it's a big show for us now, because we're getting towards the return of sports.
Finally.
We had some ISU soccer last weekend. ISU volleyball played an exhibition game against DePaul. So I'll give you guys the rundown of what we're going to discuss here for all those listening at home. We're going to start by talking a little ISU football, volleyball here. Then we're going to move into some professional baseball next segment. But then we're going to go back to ISU as Marcel Francis, our soccer expert of ESPN Plus
Proper
fame,
lad,
will join us to talk about Redbird soccer. Then he'll stick around, and him and Joe are going to try to get Joey and I into the EPL a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to try to get them a team. We're going to kind of compare Premier League teams in England, that's their soccer league, to NFL teams and some MLB teams, to see which club maybe that these two guys would like to support. So that'll be coming up at the end, though.
And that'll be fun, because I don't think Leo and I know too much about the EPL.
Yeah,
so.
Probably not.
No, but we might learn something and get into it, which is what we're here for.
And we might all learn something.
We will. We'll all learn something on today's show.
Let's move into these ISU sports a little bit, because coming up, not this Saturday, but the Saturday after, ISU football is back at Hancock Stadium. They'll be facing the Bulldogs of Butler. And this will be our first real chance to get a look at ISU football after they opted out midway through last spring. And so we didn't even – that wasn't the full group that they were even expecting last spring. Now there's some new faces, some additions, some players that were injured in the spring that are coming back. We had our reporter Eric Schweizer was at the split squad scrimmage last Saturday, got maybe the first look at the team. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of question marks that coming in. This is a very young team, which isn't what we're accustomed to with Brock Speck's Redbirds.
And it's a tough position for the Redbirds to be in this fall, because after all of the things that happened last year and last spring, they lost so many experienced players who still had eligibility to the transfer portal, because they wanted to play in that spring season and they wanted to bolster up those resumes before maybe going into the NFL draft, because we've seen a lot of representation from the Birds in the NFL in the last couple of years. So it's just been a tough go of it for the Birds as far as that's concerned. So you're absolutely right, Leo. We don't really know what to expect from this Redbirds team, who is historically has been very good. And even when the offense struggles a little bit, the defense has always been very solid. And even now, there are a couple holes on the defense where we're not quite sure what we're going to see.
And there was a couple holes that were opened up that maybe you weren't expecting to, with John Ridgeway transferring to Arkansas, defensive lineman, and Charles Woods transferring to Southern Methodist, safety. So those are two players you were counting on being multi-year starters that left to go play a level up.
Yeah.
But Coach Speck does seem confident in his group. Right now, Joe, there's a clip that Eric got for us about what he thinks are the strengths and weaknesses of the team. Let's hear a little bit about what Coach had to say about that.
Well, yeah, obviously we'll always, you know, hang our hat on the physicality of the game and try to be able to run the ball and defend the run. That's just what we do here. I think our passing game needs to continue to come about. You know, our quarterback play, developing depth throughout our team is very, very important.
So one thing I want to say about how a defensive line and everything, they lost Ridgeway, obviously. Michael Gomez, senior last year, and then at the left end, Jacob Powell is a senior. They're getting Jason Luan back, who got injured last year, but it's just going to be interesting to see, because that defensive line spot too was also one of the main reasons Spack pulled out last year, because that defensive line, they would have had to pull back from offensive linemen just to be able to put guys out there. So that's going to be really, really interesting to see what's going to be happening along the lines of that.
And they did get a boost that kind of maybe supplements the Ridgeway losses. Noah Hickox transferred down a level, transferred from Minnesota to the Redbirds, mm-hmm. so he wasn't eligible to play in the spring season.
But he's there.
A 6'4", 315-pound defensive lineman, so he might be able to kind of fill the void left by Ridgeway. And I think the points he made, that the strengths are both in, for offensively, is the run game, and defensively is stopping the run. That the run game, you guys were both at games last year. They had a duo of freshman backs that were kind of trying to
Philippe
fill the void
Brown,
left
Nigel
by
White. Yeah, the roommates.
Robinson. So if those guys can kind of take that next step, that can make things a little better for Bryce Jefferson at quarterback, because then not as much pressure is on him.
And something else that Speck talked about in that clip is talking about the depth at the quarterback position and how they need to develop that. And I think that's super important for this team that has had some quarterback struggles with Brady Davis. Now they're going to be relying heavily on Bryce Jefferson. And they have a couple other quarterbacks who they've brought in.
In freshmen, yeah.
Exactly, to kind of bolster that up a little bit. But if you look at the past couple of years, where there's no more Brady Davis, Jack Baltz, who we were pretty high on here.
Mm-hmm, transferred out.
Yeah, he transferred out. So really, it's Bryce Jefferson who's going to have to make the impact on the offense and really establish that pass game. And so it's going to be I'm excited to see if he can take that next step and be the kind of passer that the Redbirds need to have a multifaceted attack on the offensive end.
And one thing that could really help that would be the addition of Micah Jones, a transfer from Notre Dame, a former four-star recruit out of high school. He's a player, a 6'5", 225-pound receiver, and just seeing some of the tweets out of camp that he was a player that Speck was almost using as a receiver tight end hybrid, mm-hmm. getting him involved in the blocking game, getting him some jet sweeps out of the shotgun formation. So if they can incorporate him, that's a real weapon, because he didn't see the field much at Notre Dame, appeared in special teams in a few games. But he was a four-star recruit, so you know there's talent there.
Yeah, we played my sophomore year. We played him in high school. I believe he was a senior in the playoffs, and that man was just a menace on the outside. He would be getting around whenever he want, but obviously that's high school, and things change. But going to Notre Dame, that's just tough to do. I mean, it's not easy, especially when you go to a school as caliber as Notre Dame.
Chase Claypool and
Miles taking up your spot, so it's good that he came back home and everything. For one of the guys I'm keeping an eye on right now is in the tight end spot. Tanner Talla, he's going to be there this year. But also is the backup, Mitch Lewis, who went to Naperville North, Marcel Francis High School, who we're going to be having on later. He went to Naperville North, two-sport athlete there. And he transferred in from Miami, Ohio last year. Got hurt, though, so he's going to be able to come in now. And I think that they're really going to be able to do well in that position, because they did lose a couple people at the wide receiver spot. Taylor Grimes is now gone, and Austin Nagel's back, so that's good to have that. And I think that the tight end spot could be really helpful this year for the Redbirds.
And that could kind of be their X factor. Speck talked about that they got guys that are good blockers, but can also run downfield with the ball. So if you can incorporate the tight ends, get some short passes to them, then just eat up yards. That could really, because Speck's offense, they never air it out. It's always just you rely on the run game and passing when you need to. So if you could get big guys that can move downfield with the ball, that could really help. You get a weapon like Jones and a couple useful tight ends that could really set them apart.
And before we move on from football, I got to give a shout out to my boy, who's been on the team now, he's been a consistent fullback, Timothy McCloyne.
Oh, yeah.
He has been a consistent on this squad. I love watching him play.
He led the way for James Robinson. Like, he exactly. was one of the main reasons, not one of the main, but he was a big reason
no,
why James
and,
Robinson was always finding those holes.
And he's been important
holes.
In those blocking schemes, like Leo was talking about.
He was born in the trenches. He was born down there.
That man belongs in the trenches, and yeah. I just want him to get the respect he deserves.
Yeah, I think they'll have a good backfield, though, especially with their running backs, Brown and Nigel White. It's like lightning and thunder right there yeah. for them. I think it's a good compliment for each other.
And that's what you need is just to depth at running back, because especially at the FCS level, because you're not always going to have a Robinson, so you need to have multiple guys oh, yeah. that can get the ball.
It's hard to do.
I'm looking at the schedule, and I could talk myself into – I think they could go 6-5, worst-case scenario. I think 7-4 might be wishful thinking that they can maybe steal a win against some teams on their schedule, maybe a Southern Illinois or South Dakota. But I think still 6 wins can be achievable if they just play SPAC defense, efficient offense. This may not be rock bottom of a year like we've seen with other Illinois state sport programs that are in rebuilds, but this could just be a good developing year to get some underclassmen experience and still be competitive.
Yeah, and I wonder if opting out of the season now is going to help them. You know, like they're going to be rested up too.
We talked about that a little bit in the spring, just the grind that they went through a preseason camp basically last summer, anticipating that there might be a fall season. Didn't have it. We're still practicing all fall then. Then did another big, intense camp in the winter.
So they have an advantage,
So then they are getting maybe a month more recovery than some other teams in the Valley that played that full season, and that could be used to their
advantage.
Four more games. Because you mentioned Jason Lewan was hurt, but now he's able to recover. So some of these guys that might have been banged up are a little recovered. Mm-hmm. And so while the football team is also having an influx of youth talent, we should also mention that the state volleyball team is going through a new wave as well with some new additions to the program. They're a team that's been very competitive in recent years and has some big holes to fill as well.
Yeah, this is going to be a very big test for Coach Johnson and her squad, because last year they were so dominant in the Valley and they lost so many of those players that made them that good. Steph Jankowicz is the first one that comes to mind, who really had changed this program over the course of her 4 years. She really became a solid player there for the program, and now they're really in a kind of a rebuild. But the great thing about this team is they have had these younger players now for 1 or 2 years sitting under the experienced players, and so now they're ready to take that next step and kind of fill the hole. So I'm not too worried about the volleyball team as in terms of like how the football team, it's like there are a lot of question marks. I don't think there are nearly as many question marks with this team, because they have a lot of players who have already been in the system for a year or two.
And Joe, we have a quote from Coach Johnson kind of about what Joey just touched on, that I got something to add to that as well.
About the off season. Yep.
What's weird is like, I don't get the off season to train the group that were freshmen, and then the group that are sophomores didn't get an off season because of shutdown. So we've missed 2 full off seasons, and that's everyone in the country. It's not an excuse, it's reality, but that's who's playing right now. And so this is our opportunity to really transition when I think other teams are very senior laden. And so we have time to make big changes. When you're a senior laden team, your changes are small.
And so she talked about it a little bit, how there haven't necessarily been the normal offseason 2 years in a row right now, that there are some big changes. But so the Redbirds do start their season. This is going to be a bit of a grind just with the red and white Invitational versus Ohio, Marquette, UIC. They're facing some tough teams early on with a very new group. So maybe those games won't be as good for the team. Like, they might lose those in tough fashion, but that is really going to prepare them well for Valley competition. You're going to build that new team chemistry against some very tough teams before facing a little bit of a drop-off when you go into the Valley. So that could be the exact way you want to start your season.
And I think every month they're going to become a better team, too. Like, every month is almost going to be not a new season, but like a different part of the season, like a chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3 of the whole book of the season. Because Coach Johnson was also saying, and this team's young, and they've gotten this experience, but they're also putting in players that weren't here last year, or they were here and didn't get a lot of playing time, but now they are getting a lot of playing time, like Nora Janka. She got it a lot against DePaul and in the scrimmage, so it's going to be fun to look at. And there's also a couple other people coming in, local product, Caitlin or Leffer, I believe it was, or Allie Trammy. She went to Alabama and transferred in. And she was from Champaign. She was trying to come to ISU, or Coach Johnson was trying to get her to come to ISU the first time around, but she didn't want to come. But now she's going to be able to come back in. And as a junior, I think she'll bring good experience too.
And that's
from
something
Alabama.
To consider. They're now in year five under Coach Johnson, so this is the first we've really seen of her with her full wave of recruits in the program. And now you think about the talent they lost. Now that she's set this precedent for success, you could probably go out and recruit players with higher ceilings than the players you lost. But now it's just about getting them on the court. That's all we have for the Redbird recap for now. Mm-hmm. We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a crosstown baseball series that's going to be happening up north in Illinois. That's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Leo Sauter, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy back here on the Red Zone, getting set to talk some professional baseball here.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you didn't know, we've got a pretty big series coming up this weekend. Chicago White Sox hosting the Chicago Cubs. The BP Crosstown Cup is on the line. These are two teams with a lot to prove.
A lot to prove. And to be honest, guys, I don't even know what you guys want me to say during this segment.
Well, I was talking to Leo earlier today.
I want to just make you guys mad. I feel like
That's exactly what our goal was, because okay, so going into this series, let's all be real with ourselves. So let's have a little heart-to-heart. All right. The Cubs are bad. The Cubs are not a good baseball team this year.
This is not news. Yeah.
That's not news to me either.
The White Sox are a good baseball team this year.
They're pretty good.
So
there's some better teams though.
Chill.
So I think that at the end of the day, we can move forward in this discussion, accepting this fact, and going from there.
I think the whole world can probably agree.
We can all acknowledge that the White Sox are better than the Cubs. It feels very good.
Yeah, so let's just talk about the two teams maybe then, not just go into it.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking it'd be a fruitless endeavor.
Yeah.
Okay. To try to talk about who's going to win.
We know that going in, so now let's just discuss
the
two teams.
Because who's going to win the Crosstown Classic? The White Sox. Because they're the better baseball team.
You don't know that because it's literally baseball.
There's three games they need to play to determine.
Yeah, it's three games. But it's like let's first start off with the White Sox, and they're just finished a series against a pretty good Blue Jays team, and that AL East is just stacked. So it's gonna be interesting to see how that wild card stuff kind of gets settled towards the end of the year. But yeah, talk a little about this Blue Jays game.
Well, I mean, they got the win today in a pretty game that was started last night.
A lot of runs
close,
too.
But a lot of runs. It was a tough series against the Blue Jays, but you look at it, they were resting Yoán Moncada, who was coming in on a 12-game hot streak today. Mm-hmm. He still got the win. Tim Anderson didn't play in the first two games of the series. They were resting him, and they were still able to win without him. So that's what I really like about it. And what's been carrying the Sox through this has been Jose Abreu. He's been the mainstay. Him and Luis Robert have been red hot. And just the stuff about Jose Abreu's stat lines in August, he might be the best August hitter in the history of the MLB. Because here's his stat line career. These are before today's game. In July, he's a .285 hitter, 114 RBIs, 29 home runs, career over 178 games. And then go to August, he has a .332 batters average, .388 on base percentage, 160 RBIs, and now 55 home runs after he launched one today. He just goes to a whole nother level in this month of August, and that is what really helped the White Sox this past month when you had some players that were banged up, some players that needed rest, some players that went through slumps. When you had Abreu, who was so hot, that was able to carry them through what could have been a cold spell if some other parts of your lineup weren't firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, he has been such a great White Sox for such a long time that it's really fun to watch him be such a successful part of the team now, too. And it's so nice for the Sox to have all of these guys coming back from injury at the right time. It is just such an exciting time to be a White Sox fan. And that was a big win against somebody in the AL East. Yeah. And like Joe mentioned, it is so competitive, and the Yankees are on, what, like a 12-game win streak right now? Something crazy like that. Yeah. So the AL is going to be super competitive this year, so I'm hoping that the Sox can turn it on here at the right time and get at least a one postseason win. I need at least one series.
I mean, you can't just settle for the one postseason win. I think this is with their
deadline
moves.
This
is championship or
bust,
I think.
It's at least make the World Series
or bust. I guess is...
Yeah,
you don't trade for Craig Kimbrell to try to lose in the first round. Like, this is going all in. And, I mean, getting Luis Robert back, too, has really helped them as well. Eloy Jimenez hit a home run today. Even just they're getting closer to full strength, and that's what really helps. But maybe talking about the Crosstown Classic a little bit, we should discuss, did we really go into the Kimbrell trade that much last week? We talked about it a little bit, but I don't think we talked about your reaction to it, Joe.
Yeah.
As a Cub fan, what did you think of the return they got for Craig Kimbrell? Because those are, I think that was the best move the Cubs made at the deadline, because you really maybe got a foundational piece in Nick Madrigal and even Cody Hoyer, who's a useful reliever. So what did you think of that move?
Yeah, I think the Madrigal thing, I think it could work out really well with him and Nico Horner. They're kind of similar type players. We were kind of talking about that before last week, or it might have been off air even, but they're both two players that you can put in the middle of the infield. You can put them on either side, shortstop or second base.
Yeah.
So I think they could work out pretty well together, and Madrigal's still pretty young. He was. You guys liked Madrigal for
a little bit.
Yeah,
I still like him, even though he's gone. I mean,
there
have been people that were trashing him on his way out, but I think the way you look at it, he did have some defensive miscues, some struggles at the plate, but that's something all young hitters have. The defense might have made you a little mad as a second baseman, but he's a young player playing in the MLB for his first real season. I think his potential is still very much a very good MLB second baseman.
And he's in the MLB right now, too, which is another pretty good thing for the Cubs, because everyone else they got back isn't in the MLB really. Not right now. There are some players that have played.
You got
games.
A bona fide MLB.
Yeah,
player.
You got a guy that you
not
know.
A maybe. You've
not
got
a maybe
you know
or a guy who will be up and down, but this guy, Madrigal, will most
Worst
likely
case scenario,
be in the MLB.
He's a starter in the MLB.
Yeah, for
his ceiling
for his
is unknown right now, but his floor, which is a lot better than, you know, some question marks on guys.
And a part of that deal that I really like is the Cody Hoyer deal, at least for the Cubs. Because he was a very solid reliever for the Sox for the first part of the season, and he's a good young guy that the Cubs can add to their bullpen that has been a little suspect in the past couple of years. And so Leo's absolutely right, where you get these foundational pieces where now you can start to reaccumulate talent and kind of build a new core.
And that's what I was surprised that maybe they didn't make another, or some of those other moves weren't like that. I know it was different circumstances. Kimbrell was the only player with a year left on his deal, but that you didn't try to go for someone, at least a couple more players that you knew were worst case scenario MLB players. And that's what I thought they did a good job with Madrigal. Even though he's hurt, he'll still be pretty solid. He's never going to hit one out of the ballpark. He's not a power hitter.
But he might add some power in the offseason.
But he's going to get on base, and that's what you need in the modern
MLB.
Great
on base percentage.
And that's what I really liked him in the White Sox lineup, that was full of a lot of powerful hitters, that you had him who could get on base for those power bats like Abreu or Jimenez, and they could then send him home. So he could really fit in well if they do develop that next course. I think that was a solid move.
Yeah.
But
it's still fun, though. Like, what other night Rafael Ortega had that walk-off home run, and just watching the team. And they all seem like, not like happy, I would say, but they all seem like they're just still having a good time, and like they're still all in it together
and
as a team.
You look at it, there's a lot of guys on this roster that are playing for next year, trying to make the team for next year. It's not just a throw-in, we're trying to lose as many games as possible. There are a lot of guys whose MLB futures could be in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. Who are some players maybe on the team that you think aren't going to be part of the core, but would you'd like to see in the Cubs blue pinstripes next year?
I think, as of right now, Schwindel.
Okay.
Hermosillo, the local guy. I mean, he doesn't have the great stats right now, but he can hit for power, and he's got some speed. And it's just going to be weird to kind of see, I guess, what they're going to be doing in these next couple off season, because they're going to have the money. Once Hayward's contract is up, they're going to have even more money. So I'm wondering, like, are they going to be going into a real rebuild mode for a couple more years, or do you think they're going to be going into more of a try, not win now right away, but they're going to try to at least compete, which in the NL Central, I think it maybe could happen. The Brewers are a really good team, but other than that, it's kind of wide open.
Yeah, and you've got, like you said, you've got all this money that you can throw around, and so I think it'd be really wise for the Cubs to throw that at a bunch of younger guys. Yeah. Get a huge pool of young, good talent so you can develop these guys within your system and kind of rebuild from the ground up. Maybe it'll take a couple more years than I'm sure a lot of the fans would want, having been accustomed to the core that you had. But I think that's your best recipe for success, rather than going out and trying to sign a couple marquee free agents just to get second in the
NL
Central.
Those don't even work, too, sometimes. Like, it's just with baseball, it's just so inconsistent with, unless it's like a top five player, or even that. Bryce Harper's contract until this year, he was not looking great in a Phillies uniform. I mean, it's just all about the money, and even look at the Cubs now with Jason Hayward. He comes from the Cardinals, doing really well, and the Braves before that, and then since then he's been great defensively. Had that speech during the World Series that definitely won him it, so I guess you can't really complain, but you can, because other than that, it's really been nothing from Jason Hayward.
And maybe I'll be disagreeing with you guys here, but just based on some of the language from Jed Hoyer and from the Ricketts, it doesn't seem like they're willing to go in that full rebuild. It might be kind of a holding pattern where you still have Hendricks, you still have Contreras. You might be able
but
to,
we don't know, like, as fans, too. It's like that you don't know what's going on with this organization the past year.
And I'll say that the mid-2000s Cubs still had Kerry Wood and Derek Lee.
You could still, in theory, build something around those two guys. It might not be anything sustainable, but you could throw some together and maybe get a wild card spot or something. And I feel like that might be what the Cubs front office is looking to do. Try to stay relevant. You got the new TV deal. You want to make sure you got games. You haven't really made the postseason with Marquee yet outside of last season. So I think they might try to get something going, even if it's not sustainable. I think that's just kind of the way they've been operating, where they don't want to go for that full rebuild yet. But that's just my two cents. Yeah. I just don't know
what pieces they have to build around, like, other than Contreras.
Kyle Hendricks is a pretty good pitcher.
But he's not like, he's an ace, but he's. Yeah. It's hard to build around pitchers, though.
Exactly.
Like you need a plethora of pitchers.
And they just, like, completely sold out the rest of the team. So it would be really hard.
They haven't had a full rotation in the last 4 years, but they still try to go for it that year.
At least they had hitters then.
They're going to convince themselves they have hitters is what I'm thinking, though.
Yeah, they convince themselves on different things every other night. So it's all different types of things, but... With the White Sox and the Cubs this upcoming weekend, it's going to be fun. It always is. It's always fun to argue. Yeah. I'm always arguing with you, Leah. I'm always saying, remember,
you are. Joe's always
in April,
kind of stirring the
pot. I was always saying, hey, Cubs are only a game back from the Sox. Are they that much better, boys? And that kind of stuck for at least
until the huge losing streak, you guys were right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so this weekend... Not a whole lot at stake. It would have been way more fun if the Cubs hadn't gone on that losing streak. They were both top of their division. But regardless, it'll still be a fun little romp for the weekend.
I was looking through old tweets, and in 2017, I tweeted 2021 Cubs Sox World Series.
Joe, you were so close.
But I feel like a lot of people also probably did that because you knew the Sox.
You weren't the only one.
We would have gone. We would have done a remote show.
I would have done anything to be at that game. But looking up to this weekend...
I still think it's watchable. The matchup I'm circling is the Sunday matchup where you have Kyle Hendricks on the mound versus Dylan Cease. Yeah. Those are two pitchers that I think that could be a really fun matchup there, because Cease, former Cub prospect. Hendricks is someone that historically always seems to do well against the Sox. I mean, you got Keuchel for the Sox pitching on Friday, so that one could be iffy. You got Lynn on Saturday.
For the Cubs,
but I think that Sunday game is the one that maybe shapes up to be the best of the series.
Yeah, and it's always good to have that last matchup with the best starting matchup as well with the pitchers. So it's going to be fun, definitely.
It'll be a little day game that's coming up to you at 1:10 on Saturday. Anybody got predictions for the series?
I'm saying
3-0 Cubs.
I'm saying 2-1 Sox. I think Hendricks against the Sox is a little scary, but I'm thinking the Sox take the first two. Yeah,
this is our championship, and I think the players know it.
You want that crossover?
I remember when the Cubs were really good from like 15 to 19 or whatever.
Yeah.
The Sox were always beating the Cubs, and the Sox were not really a good baseball team.
Right. It always seemed to be the team on the opposite.
It's like, all right, whatever.
It's the big pride thing. That's what it's all about. Hosting
the Crosstown Cup in the air.
What other professional sports team does that? A trophy for a rivalry game?
I don't know.
I've always thought that was one of the dumber things.
But I love it so much.
I didn't mind it. I love it.
I love it so much. I wish there was more of that.
Yeah. I wish they played more, too. But it also does make it fun. They only play four to six games a year. It is kind of fun like that. You got to wait for it, build up the talking points between one another. But they're also never really good at the same time besides 2008.
That's always been a problem.
And they both really didn't do much.
The other's on the come down. It just never lines up the same.
Yeah, boys, in 2045, we'll get together and finally see them when they're both good.
That's all we have for the professional baseball segment here. When we come back, Marcel Francis is going to come on the show, and we're going to be talking a lot of soccer. Coming up next here on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
Back here on the Red Zone with Leo Sauterher, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, and now Marcel Francis joins us to the team. I believe he's the only member of the WZND News and Sports Department to have won a state championship. He did that at soccer at Naperville North. That's correct, right?
Yeah, back in the good old days, guys. Yeah.
Good old days playing some footy.
Some footy, yep.
And that's what he's here to talk about. We got two back-to-back soccer segments here on the pitch at WZND. We're going to talk about Illinois State soccer here for the first one, and then we're going to move into a little EPL segment for the second. But Marcel has gotten to see the team in a little bit of a game on Sunday, or match on Sunday. He was on the call for the ESPN Plus crew. A tough one against the University of Illinois, and we just saw the Redbirds were defeated by Western Illinois earlier this evening. So what are your early impressions here on the Illinois State Redbirds soccer team, Marcel?
Yeah, guys. So based on what I've seen, especially back on Sunday during the broadcast, offensively, I think there's a lot of promise that we have up top, especially with Riley O'Brien, who scored today against Western Illinois. And, of course, Ashley Santos as well, dominating in the midfield. They have a lot of key returners in the midfield and up top, and also on defense, too, with Alyssa Ramsden and Kirsten as well playing center back. I think just off going forward, I think they've been struggling to keep possession of the ball, especially in the midfield, and going forward and creating chances offensively. I think that's been the biggest struggle so far. And when other teams counterattack, they've really struggled with that too.
And one thing I've noticed so far this season is how they've kind of shifted the way that they attack from what was a very midfield heavy attack last season when you had Abby Basler and Ashley Santos tearing up the MVC, to now they're really giving it to their forwards. We saw Allison Baker score in the Western Illinois game today. We've seen Riley O'Brien going crazy, Sarah Lafayette. So with the loss of Abby Basler, they're kind of shifting where their attack is centered around. Do you think that is part of the reason why the possession in the midfield has been a little rocky?
Yeah, I definitely think that is for sure, because as you mentioned, Basler and Santos, they weren't just powerhouses offensively, but defensively they tracked back as well, made tackles. They're really also at second line of defense. So I think now with Basler gone, I think, yeah, they do heavily rely more on their forwards. And also, I've noticed too, in the against U of I, they used a lot more substitutions more frequently. It was also a really hot day, so it just might have been doing it for like health concerns and reasons steaming. Like that, because it was steaming hot. But yeah, I've definitely seen them use more attackers than I saw them use last year, for
we
sure.
Kind of touched on it a little bit, but one thing that stuck out for me from the Illinois game was they were outshot 25-9. That's like the opposite of what happened a lot last year, where they'd really heavily outshoot teams and kind of play that trap style of defense where you were forcing everything to the outside. But so now, granted, that was a Big Ten team in an exhibition match, but they were heavily outshot. Is that change at the strategy with the forwards maybe a cause for the reason now they were suddenly outshot by so much?
Yeah, I think the reason for that is, again, it comes down to possession, because I think Illinois State did a lot better with holding the ball in the midfield, and I feel against U of I a lot, they really kind of kicked the ball forward, kind of hoping that one of their players like Lafayette and O'Brien, who don't get me wrong, they have a lot of pace, but I think for them to get on the end of it every time is a big ask, especially when it's really hot and you have to run a lot, and they turn the ball over quite easily. So that creates other chances for the opposition to have possession, for sure.
And we were just in the studio watching this Western Illinois game that took place today. The Redbirds dropped it 4-3 in overtime. And one thing that we noticed was a couple of the Western Illinois goals, it seemed like goaltender Priya Gillen was way out of position to make the saves. And we were talking a little bit about it, and you said something interesting. You were talking about how she's coming out so much because of a perceived lack of trust in the back line, which I just think is interesting because they have had no turnover. At least the starting back line is exactly the same as it was last season, and they were very, very solid, especially in the middle there where you had you had Michaela Kirsten and Alyssa Ramsden, who are both back there, and Alyssa Ramsden was all MVC.
Yeah, exactly, and she's also preseason MVC, I believe, as well. So, yeah, it's definitely not a lot of changes besides Abby Basler in that midfield. So I think maybe it's a little bit different maybe for Gillen, because now we know this season coming in that she is the number one. There's not really up for any debate about it. So maybe she's also just getting used to being in that starting 11 as well on a regular basis. Maybe different goalkeeping coach could maybe have something to say about that. But, yeah, it's been interesting to see the first few games so far and see what to do moving forward.
How about new additions on the team this year? Are there any new transfers or freshmen on the team, or have you really not seen any so far for the Redbirds? Or what do you think?
I mean, well, there have been a couple who have come in.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Marcel, you'd know better than I, if any of them have gotten any significant playing time. We were just talking about Christiana Papanastas, who we saw a little bit in this game today, and then Iowa Brewer as well. But I don't know if there's anyone else, any other new players who have even seen the field.
No, not really. I mean, I've known a few players that came on again at the end of the game against U of I, obviously, to get some minutes and a little bit of experience as well. But, yeah, it seems like Papanastas, the right back, she has to look really impressive. She played actually most of the game against U of I as well. So I think for freshmen, I don't think we saw a lot of freshmen play last year either. It definitely looks like Coach Sylvie relies more on his upperclassmen to take the lead.
And it's also a product of having one player leave your program over the offseason. So they're in a fortunate spot where they were the second best team in the Valley last year. They only lost one player, granted Abby Basler, arguably the most important player to the program, but they have a couple players who can really step up. I love Logan Ziegler. I love what she's been able to do. I think she's a great player to take that Abby Basler role in the midfield. So I think it's just a matter of this team regaining that confidence from last year and kind of executing what they were doing in the season prior.
And it's going to be a tough road to try to execute that because they have a pretty grueling non-conference schedule following today's match, because on Sunday they take on St. Louis University, the Billikens at home. Then they host Utah on Thursday, a Pac-12 opponent who's going to bring a lot of fight to Adelaide Street Field. They go face Milwaukee, then Northwestern, and then Northern Illinois before they bring things back, start Valley play against Valpo on September 17th.
Then they play Toledo, though, too, in between.
You can't sleep on the Rockets. But facing a tough non-conference schedule when you already bring back a very familiar team from last season, that could really help them. Kind of like we were talking about with volleyball, how that non-conference schedule can shape you up, sharpen you for the Valley play.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. And I think that non-conference schedule is so strong because they did really well last year overall, especially in the MVC tournament, just coming up short against Loyola. But yeah, as I mean, going back to what Joey said, they definitely need a figure in that midfield to step up. We've seen it as a common theme. We also have a Kate Delfava, who obviously in that midfield, she did everything, goals and assists. And Abby Basler took on that role. And now hopefully someone on that team can do it as well. And I think that Ziegler is looking to be that person.
And you can have, with the roster that they have right now, they can have a midfield by committee almost, because you have Ashley Santos, who is more of a defensive-focused player, but she proved last year that she can score. You have Logan Ziegler, who has been a very good addition. And then, we were talking earlier, Erica Moline, who was a freshman last year, she's really starting to get her touches this year, but she has also showed a lot of promise. So I think you can spread that out a little bit more, especially if they're trying to run more of the offense through the forwards.
Yeah, I definitely think they can use a lot of what Erica Moline has to bring as well. She actually played a little bit more also in the spring towards the end of the year. Sylvie brought her on as a substitute, and she really seemed to impress as well. So, yeah, they definitely have the talent going forward. I think it's just how they all string it together and what tactics they're going to use, especially going forward as well, to get more shots on target. Because when they shoot, like, the ball and usually get more shots on target than their opponent, that's when they start scoring goals and win the game.
And so, with that being said, now where do you see the ceiling for this team? Do you really think they can contend in the Valley? Because we know Loyola is always going to contend or be a competitive match, but where do you see them stacking up against some of the Valley's top teams?
Well, I definitely always see Illinois State as being a contender for sure. I mean, coming 2 years straight, coming second to Loyola is, So, yeah, that's always tough. But I think it'll be a bit harder this year because they have as you said, the non-conference schedule is stronger than it's ever been for them. So I definitely see them being a contender, especially going deep into the MVC tournament. But to get an NCAA bid, it'll be a tough go, but
definitely
we'll see.
Grind. And I feel like that's a theme here at ISU with these non-conference schedules. You saw it with volleyball and football. You see it a lot, too, but with soccer as well now, that this non-conference schedule it's tough, but it also really sets you up for the conference schedule against teams that maybe aren't as high as teams like Utah and Northwestern.
And I think that's so crucial for a mid-major school, is you have to maybe make that non-conference schedule. Some games you might lose, but if you can be competitive against them, make a name for yourself.
And learn,
play that tough competition, you're going to have that advantage when you start against your Valley foes who might be playing some easier teams. Go play your Northwestern, Southern, Eastern Arkansas State Tech University and win by 7 goals. But if you face a Pac-12 team or a Big Ten team, and make it a competitive game, that could really set you up better when you have to face teams like Valpo and Southern Illinois and Indiana State.
Yeah. And talking about Loyola women's soccer for a second, they lost Freya Glenn, who was one of their most important players, straight out of London. So she was one of their main offensive powerhouses. And I remember watching that championship game, and she was so fast.
Yeah.
She was running circles around everybody. And so Loyola is also in the same kind of boat as Illinois State right now. So the Valley Tournament's going to be an interesting one, to say the least, this year. And it could be these two teams again, or it could be some dark horse that we're not even thinking about right now.
Yeah.
But it'll be fun to watch regardless.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's going to be very fun to watch, and I'm excited to hear Marcel on the call from our ESPN Soccer. It seems like Marcel and Joey are the go-to tandem for that.
The proper lads, you know. Getting in on the pitch, eh?
Yeah, we've got I've got the one Sunday. Doing that one, and then Thursday is the first time me and Marcel are going to be united for that Utah
former
game.
Former sports directors Andy Olsen and Neil Doyle on a couple games as well. Yeah. So it's a big WZNU takeover, basically.
It is. Pretty much.
Big reunion.
It always is.
Yeah.
You know the vibes. Come on.
It'll be fun. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, proper lads.
I'm very excited for this season. So excited that we're going to keep talking soccer when we come back. Joe and Marcel are going to take Joey and I to school on the EPL pitch. That's coming up next on the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND.
And welcome back to the Red Zone. I'm Joe Kennedy with Marcel Francois.
Hello, lads.
Next to me, and we have Leo Stadaher and Joey Dwyer ready to pick a Premier League team.
Oh, this.
So let's see what we can muster up with these boys, because we have something fancy coming. We're not going to go all British this whole time.
Joe and Marcel's British accents won't get submitted for CBI Awards. That's all we know for sure.
Proper lads. All right, we're not going to talk like that, because I think that would just be way too over the top.
I know we have some British.
We'll talk about that in class.
I know we have some British transfer students here on campus right now, so if you did hear that, I would just like to preemptively apologize.
To be fair,
sorry, mate.
Marcel's parents are from England.
Oh, you see.
And
okay.
Like his family all lives there, so I mean,
I'm valid, you know.
He's very upset, right, though. A couple of things happened in the summer with England's national team that upset the whole country, but we're not here to talk about that right now.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the Premier League and trying to get Joey and Leo a Premier League club, because they got to get one.
Yeah,
everyone should at least try to get a Premier League club.
100%.
I'm not that into the EPL, not because I don't like it, but because I don't know where to start. I don't know I'm looking for a team. I don't know all the teams. I don't understand the leagues. So if you guys can set me up, tell me who to root for, basically, that might be something I could follow along all season.
Exactly. There's a lot of stuff that I feel like we don't know. Just about how the league works, especially. And, like, I just wrapped my head around relegation, like, last year.
Yeah.
So I think I got an
uphill. I think it was Marcel that explained that to
me. Exactly.
Multiple conversations is where it's like, okay, explain, like the Michael Scott, explain to me like I'm 5 years old.
Yeah. There's a lot to it, but it really is kind of simple. Once you get into it,
it does make sense.
How I got into this was just FIFA, the game of FIFA by EA Sports. I just started playing that game a lot, just liked it. Then I found a team. It was a player, Mohamed Salah. He plays for Liverpool, left wing.
Mo Salah.
My favorite player, and I started playing. And then this guy, he's running
down the wing.
And that's another thing about soccer, or football, as you might call it, is the chants and the atmosphere at games are unlike anything else.
I agree with that.
It is crazy. Just watch it on YouTube, and some of these teams, I guess, you're going to have to see. A lot of these teams have better fans, or they have worse fans, or less passionate. So let's just kind of get into it. So give me some teams that you kind of like in the NFL that you kind of want to compare to, a team that you kind of like, that you kind of want a team like.
Okay, I feel like we shouldn't choose
or
the
some
Bears,
qualities,
right? Yeah. I feel like the Bears is a cop out.
If you do want the Bears, it's Arsenal.
Yeah, 100%. But I feel like that's cheap because I'm a Bears fan. But I really like. I'm a really big fan of the Chargers. I really like the Chargers. I like what they're all about. I've always kind of liked the Dolphins. I'm kind of into the Dolphins. And then I'll give you one more.
Dolphins. I feel like I kind of know what you would be doing right now. Then.
Okay, and then give me the Cardinals. Love Cardinals, Larry Fitz.
Cardinals?
So those are my three. Leo, do you have a three, like your football horoscope?
Should we just start with Joey?
Okay.
So naming off those teams, the Dolphins and the Cardinals are pretty much Everton. Everton is a football club.
Oh, did they?
In
they
Liverpool.
They used to have Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah, Lukaku.
Yes, yeah.
And Wayne Rooney played there. They've had some good players. some decent teams, but they just can never get past their big brother in Liverpool and honestly everyone else in England. They haven't made the Champions League in a really long time, and they've actually been playing in Liverpool longer than Liverpool FC has. And their fans are crazy, but they're also some of the most annoying fans out there.
And very impatient.
And you know, and you know what? You can ask Leo. I'm one of the most annoying people he knows, so I think that's a perfect fit.
I think Everton would be a perfect fit for you. And the other one, if you want like a top club, it would be Chelsea, but Everton's right there. They're always going to be competing too. They might sneak in 1 year, but they're always going to be a good enough team that you're going to love.
I'll be an Everton guy.
And that I already don't like you because I'm a Liverpool guy. So yeah, we're going to have to beef
even
more.
Some,
you're
some
a Sox
beef.
Fan. I'm a Cubs fan. You're I'm a Liverpool definitely. Guy.
If you guys hear any commotion after the show, it's because Joe accidentally left the mics on while we're going at it in the studio.
Yeah.
I can also see Joe as like a Leicester City guy. Too, as you said, like always competing, they're always on the edge of getting top four, which is like playing the best teams throughout Europe. Also got like a lot of talent too in history, but they're coming on now as like a good club support as well.
They're a good club that's going to be there.
Okay, real quick, so you guys brought up the Champions League, and I think I understand what this is. It's like all of the leagues in Europe send their best teams.
Yeah,
is that kind of what it is?
Wherever you finish the year before. In England, in the Premier League, the top four teams qualify for the Champions League. Then the fifth team.
So is this off regular season standings?
Yeah, regular season. Okay. Yeah, regular season in the Premier League. The Premier League is just a season with no playoffs.
Okay.
So the top four teams that finish there go to the Champions League. The fifth team goes to the Europa League, which is like the lower level of the Champions League.
Okay.
And the rest of the teams don't really get in anything unless they might qualify also for Europa League, but it's also a lot.
All right. So, okay. So, I'm locking it in right now.
Everton.
I'll lock it in.
Yeah.
I'm an Everton.
They got some
FC
good
guy.
Young players, too. So,
you do. Yeah.
They're interesting to watch. Dominic Calvert-Lewin. They got one of my least favorite goalies in Jordan Pickford. He was the England goalie. Absolutely tore Virgil van Dijk's ACL last year. And Everton and Liverpool always have that beef. So, I love it because you're a Sox guy, too. So, we're always going to be beefing.
I like it.
Definitely.
All right, Leo.
All right, so
let's get it going.
So the teams I gave weren't football teams, but I kind of told you what
I was looking for
like an Oakland Athletics or Carolina Hurricanes, maybe a team that's kind of on the uprise that's been built maybe through maybe not the biggest market a team, the most popular team, but as a trendy kind of sleeper pick team that was maybe built through analytics, low budget type thing, but also with good uniforms too with the Oakland consideration. But I'm maybe not looking for the bandwagon team, but a team that has a solid foundation, but it's maybe missing that big name superstar, I guess.
Yeah. So one team for sure, Leicester. That would definitely be the for sure team.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a new team this year that is completely driven by analytics and from the movie Moneyball.
Ooh.
Is Brentford, who used to be in the third division and fourth division just about 10 years ago. They worked all the way up, and their owner who bought them in about 2014, he's a gambler. He made all of his money off gambling.
Okay, so if I pick this team, I could be like, I liked them before they were cool. It's like getting on the bandwagon before.
Yeah, because right now they're also they beat Arsenal in their first game, but Arsenal isn't much. They're the Chicago Bears of the Premier League, which is not
brutal.
They should be doing a lot better, but they aren't. But Brentford is just a crazy team. They've made historic runs every year. They're in the playoff from the lower division to try to get up to the next division. They keep trying to get up.
I'm liking what you're putting down here about Brentford.
And they got some good young players.
Yeah, I was definitely thinking about this team last night. I think he'd be definitely a Wolves guy.
Wolves.
Wolverhampton Wanderers. They've definitely made a huge comeback in the Premier League in the last like 3 or 4 years under a really good manager, Nuno Esposito, who just recently took a big name club on. But they are really good at recruiting players, especially they get them from one country in general, and that is Portugal. And they get them for like really small fees as well, but they're also really big towns too. So their nickname is also like Portugal FC. But as you said, like they got decent looking uniforms. I mean, they're orange and black.
These are pretty nice. I'm looking
Wolverhampton.
Wolverhampton. They got solid international
players. They're another team that kind of came out from the lower division just about 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
And then they won FA Cup, I believe.
Yeah,
they won
FA
a cup. So, I mean, they're a team that's come up, and they got young players too, and they will be able to compete this year, even maybe fight for a Europa spot. And who knows? That's the beauty about soccer. There's teams that do come out every once in a while in a couple of years that just kind of come out of nowhere and make that Champions League spot.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's only a couple of teams that are going to be battling for first, but the run for the Champions League and even Europa League spot is just as fun.
And, it goes down to final day most of the times. Yeah.
And I'm a Liverpool fan. That's a top team. But, like, I hear from people like the glory of having a lower team reach their success is just so much better than with like a top six team.
Yeah.
Like Leicester City winning the Premier League in 15-16.
Insane year.
That would be like Brentford this year winning the Premier League, yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And like definitely Wolverhampton. The great thing about soccer, especially like Wolverhampton and what relates to the Oakland Athletics, is that they're a team that punches above their weight with like what they have like really often, like regularly, mm-hmm, against those big clubs too. So I definitely think you'd like them, Leo.
Yeah.
And you'd look good in orange. I think.
I'm thinking that. So I'm basically weighing it down between the uniforms here, where
yeah, the uniforms
Brentford
are a
has
big part
the red and white stripes, the vertical stripes,
those
which
are
pretty
nice.
Yep.
I like those.
Ooh, yeah,
but
okay.
I'm really
and
liking
the bees, the Brentford bees.
The Brentford bees.
There's not really mascots, but that's kind of what it is.
Yeah. And then, but these So am I saying right, Wolverhampton?
Yep, Wolverhampton.
These are
Wonders.
Pretty nice. Yeah. What is it? The orangish black.
I gotta say. The Wolverhampton logo, though, it looks like a bad esports team logo.
I know. I don't like that part. Honestly, if
like,
logo,
it looks almost like the generic logo you could pick in a video game.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just like too generic. Too.
Like when I think about the EPL, my first impression is always like the tradition, and it's like these 100-year-old clubs.
Yeah.
And that's why I love it.
And a lot of these are, too.
And that's why I got sold on Everton, because their crest literally looks like it could be implanted in brick on the outside of a castle.
And they used to have legendary goalkeeper Tim Howard, USA hero.
Oh,
yes. So that's also another big way.
Landon Donovan also played for Everton for a stint of time as well.
Yeah.
So,
okay, so,
yeah.
So they get all the good U.S. guys.
Have
they recruited Marcel yet?
Do they
know you won state in soccer?
Hey, you know what? You can always send a mail.
Yeah, let me send a little email really quick. Let me get in touch with my contacts. I'll see what I can do.
Give me trial.
There is one team you cannot support, and that is Manchester City.
Okay. Oh,
because no one. If you're a supporter of that team, just like,
is that like being like a Cowboys fan or like a bandwagon fan?
That's
or
even.
We were thinking
Yankees.
Like Houston Astros almost.
Oh,
kind of.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Even though City, actually, they kind of did do some transfer violations that got taken away. So it's just a team that's just always good. Because in the Premier League or in soccer in general, there's no salary cap
at
all.
Exactly.
So a Saudi Arabian oil company bought Manchester City. And this was a team that was also fighting to stay in the Premier League just about 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And now they get bought, and now they're buying some of the top players in the world, and might even be buying Cristiano Ronaldo in the next couple of days, or even hours, possibly.
You played for my beloved Manchester United, just on the other side of town, so I'm heartbroken at this moment.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So we got Liverpool with Joe Kennedy, we got Marcel, Man U, I'm an Everton guy now, starting right now, and Leo, have you made your final decision?
I've made my final decision, the pick is in. I'm pledging my allegiance to Brentford Football Club.
Let's
go, Leo.
I really like the message that Joe said that they're built on analytics. That's kind of where I like with
the
Hurricanes.
They're literally built off Moneyball.
So I want to see if that actually works, if you can do that in the EPL, one of the biggest stages in the world, if that stuff actually pays off, or it is there that debate over the eye test type thing. So I'm going to follow that all season, see if it actually works, and see if it leaves me feeling miserable about my fandom or if I end up happy at the end of the year.
Yeah. So with Brentford, they bought Ollie Watkins, who's a player – Neil Maupai and Saeed Brenhama, each for less than $1 million, and they sold all of them together for over $100 million.
Yeah.
So they take these guys, and then they sell them. They use them for a couple years.
So this means I'm going to have to learn a new bunch of players every couple years?
Well, it's just like the A's. They sold their best players, and they
That's
got
true.
All these other guys. And that they're just going
to
kind of...
But if you're trying to sell me on a team I'm pledging my lifelong allegiance to, this isn't the best pitch, but I like
it. Oh, no. But that's also how you get your
I
money.
Get it. I understand
then,
it. That
because also with it, because they're selling these younger players, so they're going to be younger, so you're able to buy veterans, too, that are able to still keep
help
your club.
Help you win now.
Yeah, help you win now
All
as
right,
well.
I'll try it. Let's see how this goes.
Definitely. And they also got like a lot of good young players. They have someone right now, Ivan Toney. He's like a really promising really promising striker. He scored like 30 plus goals in the championship. It was a division below the Premier League last season. So you guys are definitely gonna when you sell him in 2 years, it'll be for a lot of money.
All right, be really happy then.
So you're telling me it's not just a bunch of blokes.
It's not just
a bunch of blokes.
Some proper lads.
What accent was that, Joe?
We have just We do our English accents.
That was Marcel and I, something else.
But no, Marcel, we also, I feel like we've created our own accent.
Exactly.
It's like something
it's ingrained,
I don't want to say.
It's ingrained in my mind that that's what a British accent sounds like, because I hear it every single day when Marcel walks in and Joe and I are sitting in the news office, and I just hear, Marcel Francois.
What's up, Dwayne? Let's watch it. Too much Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders in it.
Yeah, but we've been doing this since last year. Like, we just created that lingo like on our own.
But I'm gonna look at some other teams real quick, just like looking at comparing them to NFL teams. So we got Marcel's team, Manchester United, is the New England Patriots.
Oh, that's brutal.
Teams that were dominant with Sir Alex Ferguson, Man U, when they won 38 trophies in 26 seasons. Yep. And then, but before, just like the Patriots, without Belichick and Ferguson's, both teams were pretty mediocre with some success. They would win some trophies and get to finals, but not really too much. And Man U has Chevy as their sponsor. So
yeah, what a coincidence.
Pretty lit from that. And both teams have struggled since their heroes left, with Tom Brady leaving the Patriots, and then
Cristiano Ronaldo leaving United.
And then Ferguson too. Ferguson as well. Like he left, and they, but Man U's in an up direction. Patriots maybe not so
Mac
much.
Jones,
but
Mac Jones.
Yeah, there's But you can't, I guess you can't really, you don't know yet.
Yeah,
I guess. You don't know that yet. The New York Jets are Newcastle United, a team that used to be very good and just not do anything the past 20 years and just live in their past successes as well. But, yeah, you got any other comparisons, Marcel? Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I was definitely thinking the San Francisco 49ers to being a club that – it's, they're always sort of kind of in contention, but there's usually something along the line where a personnel injury or something like that goes wrong. And for that team, I was definitely thinking you haven't read Tottenham. Tottenham Hotspur.
Tottenham Hotspur is a team like the Minnesota Vikings. Always going to get there, but they're just going to choke.
Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
That's what happens. And I was reading, and this guy's a Vikings and Tottenham fan, and I just could not imagine that feeling at all. But Chelsea is another big club. They won the Champions League last year over Manchester City, and they're the Pittsburgh Steelers, both teams with success in recent years, but also have had some drama.
Yeah, definitely.
Can't wait to see where this EPL season takes us. Hopefully it's something I can Joey and I can stay invested in all season long. I'm going to need Joe or Marcel to maybe make a standings board all season, keep us invested by, you know, giving us some grief about when our teams struggle or something. You got to hold it over our heads, because I want to like this.
And you can watch them live.
Every help to get me to,
over the weekend, you can watch them live. So
but
just
I
keep
college
an eye.
Football over the weekend.
But it's in the morning, so it's perfect.
Well, you got sacrificed.
Hey, Marcel and I wake up at 6:30 to
I'll
watch
come over. I'll come over and watch with you.
Okay, for sure.
I'll try. For you guys, I'll try. If it was like, you know, if it was Jose or Blake that were trying to get me to do it, I probably wouldn't.
Yeah,
but for Joe and Marcel, I'll do it.
We appreciate it, Leo. We appreciate it.
But that's all the time we have for this show. I appreciate Marcel coming on. We're getting back in the swing of things. Next week, we're hoping to have some great guests from either Illinois State or some of the local programs here, because it's a jam-packed week. We're going to have some sports broadcasts coming up next week. Until then, that's all we have for you here. So for Joe Kennedy, Joey Dwyer, Marcel Francis, thank you very much for listening. This is Leo Sauter signing off on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of the Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6. Right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.